This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. In about an hour on 91.3 on Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, John Field's Nocturnes, and a Mahler Symphony reduced to chamber music, and more. That begins at 8 on Of Note with Katie Hendrickson here on 91.3. It's 6 minutes after 7, and this is a Tuesday evening edition of Ozarks at Large for March 13th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. The question, what city in northwest Arkansas has the best tasting tap water in 2018, will be answered tomorrow morning in Rogers. The Northwest District of the Arkansas Water Works and Water Environment Association will host the annual Drinking Water Taste Contest at 11:20 tomorrow morning at the Center for Nonprofits in Rogers. Ahead this hour on Ozarks, questions about how doctors in rural Arkansas prescribe opioids, plus how the work requirement for some Arkansans receiving Medicaid benefits will work, and the militant grammarian resurrects some long-dead words. First up tonight, China, the world's largest importer of raw recycled materials, is enacting stricter quality controls to prevent the import of unsorted or contaminated glass, paper, metals, and plastics, which in the early days of the industry it routinely accepted. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich discovered, Arkansas municipalities and solid waste districts are working strategically to meet demand and bottom lines.
Fayetteville garbage trucks that collect tons of yucky solid waste every year offload it at this transfer station for hauling by semi-tractor trailer to the local landfill. But last year, more than 6,500 tons of raw materials worth more than $2.7 million was recovered in Fayetteville as recycled paper, cardboard, glass, metals, and plastics. Steve Hardister this morning hand sorts recyclables from a green curbside collection crate into various bins on his recycling truck in South Fayetteville, but he occasionally is forced to toss certain plastic containers back into the green crate, which will end up in the trash.
And then we have a big sticker we put on there, and we check off why and what we do and don't recycle. And if you look underneath the bottle, they'll have a little recycling symbol, and it'll tell you what number it is.
Code numbers 1 through 7, depending on the type of plastic. Fayetteville only accepts 1s and 2s, plastic water, juice, and detergent bottles. Brian Pugh, City Solid Waste Reduction Coordinator, says it's all about the marketplace.
For instance, in a number 1 bottle, the number 1 end market for that is actually a fiber market. So a plastic water bottle or soda bottle can go into making carpet or clothing or something like that. And then the number 2 plastics, those typically get made into either more bottles, more jugs, like number 2 jugs, or they're more durable plastics like construction, piping, plastic lumber.
But more residents are tossing number 3 through 7 stuff, hoping to recycle their plastic Keurig coffee pods, small yogurt cups, grocery sacks, and instant microwavable processed food containers.
Unfortunately, all those other types of plastics, the markets for those are very, very poor right now.
The higher numbered plastics are more expensive to sort and smelt into new products. The industry is still developing. But the more solid waste diverted from landfills as recyclables, the more money counties and cities can save on landfill costs and earn on recycled plastic, paper, cardboard, metals, and glass commodity sales. The biggest consumer of raw U.S. recycled plastics is China. According to the U.S. International Trade Commission, China imported 776,000 metric tons of reclaimed plastic from the U.S. in 2016, valued at $2.3 billion. In the early days of resource recovery, much of that was unsorted and contaminated. But given a global glut of recycled materials emerging from developing nations, China has become more finicky, like Fayetteville, on what it accepts, says Brian Pugh.
So if you send anything over there that's more than a half of a, half a percent, I guess, of contamination, then they're going to reject that.
Because China will no longer accept certain cargo shipping containers packed with bales of mixed plastics and paper, U.S. states are feeling the impact, including Fayetteville, which sells its recyclables domestically.
So, yes, we have experienced price decreases in the plastic markets because, in essence, there's an oversupply of the plastics coming back onto the domestic side right now.
Randy Hall is director of Sebastian County Regional Solid Waste Management District in Fort Smith, one of 18 regional districts in Arkansas. He, too, only accepts clear bottles and jugs at voluntary drop-off centers, no 337s, which are crushed, baled, and sold to a global recycling manufacturer, Smurfit Kappa Group.
They've got processing plants here in the United States.
Given he has a secure domestic market, his district, he says, has not yet been impacted by the Chinese ban.
We're not seeing any problems at this time with, offloading our plastics.
West Coast cities reportedly are not so fortunate having to stockpile or even landfill recycled waste. Robin Reed, director of Boston Mountain Solid Waste District, headquartered in Prairie Grove, says they produce the best product possible to stay competitive.
That everything is hand-sorted, so we have really clean recycling that comes in from the municipalities and different rural recycling programs, and then we have a public drop-off as well.
Reed says her district recycled more than 40 tons of plastic bottles last year. The Pulaski County Regional Recycling and Waste Reduction District operates a single-stream collection system, selling recycled materials to Waste Management, headquartered in Houston. Waste Management, simply by its girth, is reportedly taking a direct financial hit from the Chinese policy. A sea change, however, is needed, Pulaski District Executive Director Craig Douglas says, to clean up the recycling supply chain.
The Chinese policy, there is some good that can come out of that.
His district covers both rural and municipal recycling, including the city of Little Rock, where many residents, he says, don't practice right recycling.
Curbside recycling here in Pulaski County, there are hundreds of tons that are recovered every year. The problem that we face is that many times, regardless of the volume, many times in the curbside recycling carts, recyclable items are mixed in with items that are not recyclable. And when that happens, then there is a very real possibility that the entire recycling cart, the contents of the recycling cart, could end up in the landfill. And that's not what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to divert material from the landfill.
To meet the growing environmental and market demand for clean, sorted, recycled materials, Douglas last month launched a district-wide educational program called Do Recycling Right.
And that includes what you should always recycle, what you should always put in your recycling cart, and what you should never put in your recycling cart. And so we've got a whole list of do's and don'ts that we're currently advertising. That is included on a website called mydoright.com. We are sending out in the next week a jumbo postcard on do's and don'ts to all households in Pulaski County. And we're also partnering with the media so that they are promoting recycling tips every week and will for the next year.
Americans generate more than 250 million tons of solid waste annually, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. One-third of the waste is composted or recycled. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Serious concerns are being raised over who can prescribe opioids in Arkansas. Karen Trico-Stewart, with our partner station KUAR in Little Rock, reports that one doctor's prescribing habits are shocking some members of the medical community and raising doubts over standards for practicing medicine in Arkansas.
Bill Whitty sits on his front porch on a large plot of land in Harrison. He lost his daughter Jill to an opioid overdose. She was 24. In the distance, over some rolling hills, is the cemetery where Jill is buried.
And you'd have to have field glasses to see it, but you can see her headstone from here.
Whitty wanted to understand how Jill and the man she was with at the time of her death had access to such large amounts of powerful narcotics like fentanyl, morphine, and oxycodone. He started to look into the pain management physician in town, Dr. James Hawk. Jill was not Dr. Hawk's patient, but doing some investigating was his attempt to get more information on what might be happening in his community. He'd seen statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that Boone County, home to Harrison, was tied with Sebastian County in having the largest opioid prescribing rates in Arkansas, almost three times the rate per capita than the national average. The difference, however, is that prescribing rates have gone down noticeably in Sebastian County, but have increased in his county. He gets emotional thinking about his grandson, who was just 3 years old when Jill died. It's hard for him to think about one day having to explain to him what happened to his mother.
I'm not the kind of person, and I wasn't the kind of dad, that's going to have to look at my grandson and say, gee, we don't know. We never checked into it. I'm not going to dishonor my daughter by just saying, gee, she was an addict. Those things happen.
Hawk's file with the medical board is more than 900 pages. It includes statements from medical experts who reviewed patient charts and warned that Hawk was prescribing excessive amounts of opioids and other controlled substances, and that he wasn't keeping proper records to justify continuing to prescribe the medication. In March of 2016, Dr. Daniel Pace of Searcy Medical Center, who reviewed five patient charts, wrote, "There are irregularities which rise above the standard for malpractice." He went on to say that Dr. Hawk had displayed behavior and treatments which meets the criteria for grossly negligent. In addition to serious concerns about prescribing habits, there are questions about whether mental illness could be affecting Hawk's ability to practice medicine safely. A psychiatrist in Little Rock, Dr. Brian Hyatt, who reviewed Hawk's mental state in September of 2016, noted that Hawk had just had a severe bipolar manic episode. He said Hawk's wife told the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences that he'd tried to strangle her. His wife also claimed Hawk had been abusing family pets, and his stepson wrote a letter to the medical board saying his father had threatened to hurt his dog and that he'd said he wanted to look into the dog's eyes while he was beating it. He said his father would also aggressively kick his cat. He told the medical board Dr. Hawk was a great guy when he was on medication and attributed the disturbing behavior to his father refusing to take it. But it wasn't the first time questions arose about whether Hawk was mentally fit to practice medicine. While in California in 1998, he had a manic episode there and was hospitalized. He was told that if he wanted to keep his license, he would need to be on 15 years probation, take medication, and be under the care of a psychiatrist. Dr. Hawk moved to Arkansas shortly thereafter, and Carlos Villatoro with the Medical Board of California explains that he surrendered his California license in 2000.
He did not seek to reinstate his surrendered license, and that's the last that we heard of him.
When Hawk came to Arkansas in 1999, he was told he must be under the care of a psychiatrist for a year before he could get a permanent license. In the 2016 letter to the state medical board, the psychiatrist in Little Rock expressed concerns over whether Hawk would be taking his mood-stabilizing medication after the manic episode. Dr. Hyatt wrote that it was suggestive of an utter indifference to the potential consequences his untreated mental illness could cause his patients, and therefore represents gross negligence. While Hawk was seeking treatment in an inpatient facility that year, a doctor was recruited to fill in at his practice in Harrison. Soon after she started, she called the medical board to say she was shocked to see the amount of pain medication Dr. Hawk was prescribing. She described the clinic as a drug mill and left after 2 weeks. But despite it all, Dr. Hawk continues to practice medicine.
That's not someone who should be in the practice of medicine. So I'm not going to sit here and defend the medical board on this decision. There's just no way I'm going to.
That's Dr. Carlos Roman, who heads the Pain Management Review Committee of the Arkansas Medical Board. The committee looks at physician prescribing habits when complaints are made and then makes recommendations. Roman has said in his assessments that Hawk was repeatedly giving excessively large quantities of narcotics to patients with common medical problems, and that there was a high risk that patients were selling their medications. He's told the medical board that Hawk shows an extreme departure from the standard of medical care. Dr. Roman says he feels like he's fighting an uphill battle when it comes to speaking out about the risks surrounding opioids.
There's a lot of crappy politics on this because there's a shipload of money that people are making on this, from the drug companies to the physicians. And a lot of these physicians are, you know, they have effective lobbying with legislators, et cetera.
And he also says that a shortage of physicians in small communities in Arkansas leads to lower standards.
The other thing with the medical board is there have been doctors that were bad prescribers in small communities. And one of the fears, the apprehension of the board was, well, if we take this doc out, he's got 2,000 patients. Who's going to take care of them? They're going to flood the ERs and opiate withdrawal, all the family practitioners. You know, they don't have time to, it is a very complicated consult. So there have been times even where the medical board has not wanted to make a disciplinary move because of the effect it ripples through the community, because it affects so many people.
We spoke with the medical board's attorney, Kevin O'Dwyer, who did not want to be recorded for broadcast. He says no one disputes that Hawk had a manic episode in 2016 and that it wasn't safe for him to continue to see patients. But he says that after undergoing treatment, a psychiatrist found him fit to practice medicine again. But a report from that psychiatrist isn't found in Hawk's file. O'Dwyer says that documentation is kept by the Arkansas Medical Foundation and isn't released to the public. As for overprescribing opioids, O'Dwyer says the board doesn't revoke a doctor's license for that. It instead imposes requirements on doctors like additional education. He says in Hawk's case, those requirements were taking two courses, one on setting boundaries with patients and one on proper prescribing. We reached out to Dr. Hawk, who initially agreed to be interviewed, but a few hours later, that interview was canceled at the advice of his attorney, Bruce Tidwell, in Little Rock. Tidwell would not talk about Hawk's case specifically, but did say he has concerns about how overprescribing of opioids is currently being defined. He says fear seems to be resulting in rules that are too stringent and that physicians should be allowed to make decisions on a patient-by-patient basis.
We're kind of in an overcorrection period, maybe. And we've had some bad cases out there about too many opioids.
He also seemed to echo the sentiment that physician shortages in parts of the state are a factor in decisions about removing physicians from communities. He says he thinks the medical board has a tough job because it gets conflicting information from different experts.
Trying to balance keeping the public safe, but at the same time, not removing medical care where, you know, we don't have an overabundance of it in Arkansas, especially once you get outside of the major metropolitan areas.
As for doctors practicing medicine safely while battling mental illness, Tidwell explains that if a physician is admitted to inpatient treatment for mental health issues, they'll typically have their license suspended temporarily, as in Hawk's case, and then are cleared to return to practice.
The board has always been encouraging of physicians, if they think they need help, to get help. And usually that will be monitored maybe through the medical foundation, where they just get reports every now and then to say this person's doing what they need to do, they're safe to continue practicing. But in those cases, you know, usually they are allowed to continue practicing.
And meanwhile, Bill Witte of Harrison continues to mourn the death of his daughter. He says investigating doctors can feel strange to him since he grew up in a culture where it was ingrained that doctor always knows best.
And whatever the doctor tells you to do, you don't say why. You don't say, are you sure? You don't question them. You trust them. And how much dependency is there on that trust? Because that trust also becomes complacency and it also becomes apathy. And, you know, that may be part of the reason we've got an opioid epidemic.
For KUAR News, I'm Karen Trigo Stewart.
It's 24 minutes after 7. This is Ozarks at Large. Just ahead tonight on Ozarks, Walton Arts Center is already thinking about next year. Last night, the venue revealed its lineup of Broadway productions for the 2018-19 season. Antoinette Grajeda was there, and she'll be here next on Ozarks at Large. One of the plays returning to Walton Arts Center is Jersey Boys, inspired by the music of the Four Seasons. The film version of Jersey Boys is the movie part of Dinner in a Movie, hosted by the OK Mozart Music Festival and Bartlesville Film Society, taking place later this month in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. The dinner part, Stromboli. Both the dinner and the movie take place in Ambler Hall in Bartlesville. You have to make reservations by a week from today, and you can learn much more at OKMMusic.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the region's daily newspaper, offers local news where we live, play, and work in Benton and Washington counties. It's one newspaper for one region. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, online at nwadg.com.
This is a Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Antoinette Grajeda. Welcome.
Hi.
You were at Walton Arts Center last night.
I was. They were unveiling their Broadway season for the, 2018-2019. Good Lord.
Right?
Yeah, so they did that last night.
The Broadway series, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so 8 shows in total.
Yes.
How many have been here before?
3.
So 5.
Premieres. Arkansas premieres.
Excellent. Well, let's go down the docket.
Okay. So all musicals, as we have decided and realized last night. The first one that's coming in October is Jersey Boys.
Which is one of the returnees, right?
Right. I've actually never seen this one. Have you?
No. I mean, I'm
familiar.
Yeah. The Four Seasons,
Frankie Valli. It's the story of that group. But, good,
much beloved.
Much beloved. And just one of those ones I haven't seen. So maybe this is the time. also, later in October, is School of Rock. So based on the movie with Jack Black.
Right.
And it has children's band. Like, the kids actually play on stage in addition to singing and, you know, speaking their roles and sort of like that. So that looks like a lot of fun. I haven't seen the movie either.
You haven't seen School of Rock?
No. It looked funny. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
So I assume it stays fairly true to that. There are 14 new songs from Andrew Lloyd Webber, as well as original songs from the movie. And but I guess they were talking about how it's the first ever kids rock band to play their instruments on stage for a Broadway musical.
And we have a couple of School of Rock franchises in Northwest Arkansas, so there might be some local interest.
Maybe. Do you know if those are connected?
I mean, it's the same logo as used in the movie, so it's at least financially connected.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll look into that.
All right.
Okay. So another premiere is On Your Feet in December, and that's going to tell you the story of Emilio and Gloria Estefan.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Cubans who come to America and break into the pop world. And there's tragedy along the way that I think people forget about because they're so used to the music and the popularity of that. So last night what they did is they officials from the Walton Arts Center would discuss the show, but they'd also show you like a little snippet of it. And this looks like a lot of bright colors and a lot of good dancing. And so I haven't seen this one because it is newer, but it is a first for the Walton Arts Center. So I think you'll recognize the music, if nothing else.
I would think so, yes.
If nothing else. In February, the Lincoln Center Theater Broadway production of Falsettos is coming here they'll be here February 8th and February 9th. So real quick, but they'll be launching their tour here.
Oh, that's happened a few times.
Mm-hmm. And so this year, that's who's doing it. The show premiered in 92, which is when the Walton Arts Center opened, so kind of that connection there. And I'll read you the description here because this is another show I was not familiar with. Falsettos revolves around the life of a charming, intelligent, neurotic gay man named Marvin, his wife, lover, about to be bar mitzvah's son, their psychiatrist, and the lesbians next door.
It's a full cast.
It's a very full cast. And so it looks to be humorous, but also some serious themes emerge later on in the play. So what do you call it? A dramedy, I suppose?
Poignant.
Poignant, yes. Yeah. Yes. So that's coming in February. Later in February, so February 26th through March 3rd, is A Bronx Tale.
Now, the movie was directed by Robert De Niro.
Right.
And I think it's based loosely on the life of Chaz Palminteri, the actor.
That is my understanding, yes.
It's kind of a relationship between a young man and his father and maybe the desire to be like a
mob boss, basically. Yeah, so it's that kind of struggle. It takes place in the Bronx in the 1960s.
And this too now as a play is a musical.
Yes, also a musical. It was directed by Robert De Niro and Jerry Zaks. And it's based on loyalty and family and like he's based on the Academy Award nominee Chaz Palminteri's story. Is doing well in all of the incarnations, as far as I can tell. So it's one of those stories, I guess, that just easily jumps from one platform to another.
And Robert De Niro has an Arkansas connection.
Does he?
His second movie ever was Bloody Mama, filmed in Marion and Baxter County back in the 70s.
Another movie I have not seen.
Well.
What is that one about?
It's about a gangster. Shelley Winters played a gangster, and her sons were Robert De Niro and Bruce Dern. And it's a Roger Corman movie, and it's very odd and very of its time.
Okay.
I want to see the musical Bloody Mama. I don't know if it exists yet. But
I don't know, but it could, possibly.
Yes.
It'll come here. One day. The next one on the lineup is one I'm excited about, Waitress.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's coming April 9th through April 14th. They were saying last night that it had the first all-female creative team on a Broadway musical. And I think something that, because I remember NPR did stories on this, is a lot of the music was written by Sarah Bareilles. And so Waitress tells the story of a waitress named Jenna, and she's an expert pie maker who tries to dream her way out of a small town and a loveless marriage. And also part of last night's fun is they would bring some of the Broadway performers on stage to sing a song or do a performance from one of these plays. And for Waitress, they brought Grace Stockdale on stage to sing She Used to Be Mine. So again, that one is April 9th through April 14th.
And again, that was a movie that was not a musical, but now is
mm-hmm.
on stage.
Mm-hmm. In May, I think a lot of people are excited about this return, Cats.
The venerable Cats.
Right. It was, I believe it was the... if not the first year that the Walnut Center opened, then like the second season they got Cats.
Yeah, it kind of... because my wife, Laura, and I went to that production of Cats.
Oh, did you?
Yes. So, and that was what kind of put, we thought, Walton Arts Center on the map. If you could get Cats in 1993 or four, then you had arrived as a venue.
Well, they decided to bring it back. And so that will be here May 28th through June 2nd.
More Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yes, more Andrew Lloyd Webber. And then rounding out the season, June 18th through June 23rd, is Les Mis, another return, another favorite that people are familiar with, and another musical.
Yes, and a big, big production.
Very big production. So, yeah, I think overall people seemed excited about the picks and seems fairly well-rounded.
So this is... 18-19, so the first one comes in the fall.
Right. So Jersey Boys will be here on October 5th through October 7th.
All right. And what do you do if you want to know more about all of this?
You go to waltonartcenter.org.
Antoinette Grajeda, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Life in Northwest and Western Arkansas comes with many options. There's an abundance of music, theater, speakers, charity events, and more. KUAF keeps you current on events happening in our area through hundreds of public service announcements each year, the Community Spotlight Series, Katie Henriksen's Arts Beat, and of course, Ozarks at Large. KUAF connects you to the community, and financial support from our listeners makes it all possible. Help us keep you in touch with all our region has to offer. Give a gift online today at supportkuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Following last night's Bentonville School Board meeting, students in that city will get another school resource officer. Some students in the Bentonville district will be wearing ID badges in the future, and some will receive detention if they participate in tomorrow's National School Walkout to protest gun violence. The board voted unanimously to require 9th through 12th grade students to wear ID badges at school. The move will cost the district about $40,000. The board also voted 4-3 to uphold the district's absentee and tardy policies as they are written in the student handbook, which means any student who participates in tomorrow's walkout may be marked as absent and assigned detention. In Fort Smith, the school board there voted unanimously in favor of asking residents for a millage increase to fund improvement projects at several schools. The district will ask for a roughly 5.6 millage increase during an election on May 22nd. That's during the primary election date. That translates to about $9 extra a month per $100,000 of home value. The millage increase would fund about $120 million worth of projects across the school district. including storm shelters, gyms, and technology expansion. Arkansas lawmakers are back at the state capitol for a special session of the legislature that began this morning. A key item being considered is a new regulation regarding pharmacy benefit managers and reimbursement rates to pharmacists. State Representative Michelle Gray of Melbourne says it became necessary after the state's largest insurance carrier switched its pharmacy benefit manager, or PBM, this past January.
But when Blue Cross decided to do the same type of contract, then we now had, 90% of the total market share was paying this below-cost model, reimbursement model to the pharmacies. And at that point in time, that's when it really hit home. And we have pharmacies and pharmacists who, haven't paid themselves, independent stores, they haven't paid themselves a salary since December.
Gray says as a Republican, she needs to walk the line on regulations, but says this is a clear example of needed regulatory intervention. The bill would also free pharmacists to discuss potentially cheaper generic drug options with customers. A spokeswoman for CVS tells Arkansas Business the draft bill's language, quote, would eliminate tools that help lower the cost of prescription drug benefits. Lawmakers will also discuss highway funding and the permitting process for animal waste systems. Remember those rumors late last year about Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton becoming the director of the CIA in a series of events launched by a possible removal of Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State? Well, it didn't happen. Rex Tillerson is out as Secretary of State, and former CIA Director Mike Pompeo is replacing him. But that's where the speculation about Arkansas's senator ends. President Donald Trump announced Mike Pompeo will be replaced by current Deputy Director Gina Haspel. She becomes the first woman to direct the agency. The Arkansas Razorback softball team is returning home after dropping a pair of one-run games in Georgia yesterday. Arkansas lost 1-0 and 5-4 in Athens. The Razorbacks will host five non-conference games, beginning with Friday's 5 p.m. matchup against Iowa State this weekend. And the Arkansas men's golf team is also returning from a trip to Athens, Georgia. Arkansas won the Southern Intercollegiate Tournament yesterday by 17 strokes. Arkansas is ranked 18th in the country. And the band Modest Mouse is returning to Northwest Arkansas. The Walmart Amp will host the band Thursday, July 19th, as part of the Cox Concert Series. Tickets, available through the usual Walton Arts Center outlets, go on sale Friday morning at 10. The Fayetteville School District released the results of its students' demographic study this month and shared the findings with the school board and members of the city council. Superintendent Matthew Wendt says the study shows Fayetteville is growing, but it's no Bentonville, Rogers, or Springdale. He says there are about 150 to 200 new students per year across the entire school system, although the district is projected to have more than 10,000 students beginning the 18-19 school year.
The growth is manageable. I also like to believe that the growth is aligned with the plans of the city council, the mayor.
The study also finds it's likely the high school and junior high schools will be able to accommodate the student population for the next 10 years.
Some probably feel the high school is too big at this point, but those are folks that likely have not had the opportunity to spend a day or a week in our high school. Yes, it's a large campus, but our classrooms, the actual classrooms where the teaching and learning is taking place, it's no larger than many other classrooms across Northwest Arkansas.
That means, Wendt says, the district will not be building a second high school anytime soon. He adds most of the growth, 90% of it, is happening at the elementary school level.
At the elementary level, somewhat of a different story. We have a pressure point in the Holcomb Elementary School area. I believe the demographic study also indicates that there is growth in other areas, Owl Creek area, Happy Hollow area, certainly Vandergriff on the east side.
The Fayetteville superintendent says he's also pleased with the projected growth within the boundaries of Washington Elementary School.
And that is, again, directly aligned to the city's strategic plan to reform, restructure, and revitalize the heart, what I call the heart of Fayetteville. And what we're seeing is older homes being demolished, newer ones built, younger couples and families moving into that area.
Wynn says despite the growth in the elementary schools, no immediate plans exist to build a new elementary school in the next 3 years. But by 2022, it will likely be something the district is thinking about. During that same school board meeting, Wendt also announced the formation of a school safety and security task force. Ozarks at Large's Uzana Sitek will have more on that on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF.
The irreverent high-energy comedy drama Viet Gone by Quy Nguyen begins its run on stage this Wednesday through April 8th at Theater Squared. Inspired by the playwright's parents, Viet Gone is a twist on the classic boy-meets-girl love story as these Vietnamese refugees meet at a relocation camp in Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. 443-5600 or theater2.org for tickets. Spring Break Camp is a week-long Pottery Wheel camp for children ages 8 through 14 presented by Community Creative Center located in Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. Morning and afternoon sessions are offered where children explore throwing on the pottery wheel, clay glazing techniques, and more. CommunityCreativeCenter.org or 571-2706 for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It's time for our visit with the militant grammarian, Catherine Childs. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kyle. You know, one of my favorite old-time movie stars is W.C. Fields.
I just want to stop us here for a minute because it seems as though if Ozarks at Large was ever trying to get a younger demographic, our conversations just... We talk about old-time radio, W.C. Fields. I digress. Go ahead.
That's all right. Well, as you might imagine, it's his use of language that appeals to me.
Yeah.
Every so often, I'll break out with one of his speeches from the 1934 It's a Gift. Was the film name. He was looking for someone by the name of Lafong, Carl Lafong, capital L, small a, capital F, small o, small n, small g, Lafong, Carl Lafong. That might make it evident why I don't get a lot of invitations. So all this is to introduce a list of words I ran across from Dr. Goodword, also known as Robert Beard, who has a PhD in linguistics. He regularly sends out a good word via email.
Okay.
And the word he was focusing on was one I'd never heard, gimcrack.
I'm unfamiliar.
Yeah, G-I-M, crack.
All right.
From 1676, gimcrack means a showy object of little use or value.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Now, what about Jimmy Crack Corn?
I know that's a song.
Right. And the word was sometimes written as J-I-M, crack, which may have led to its use in the folk song Blue Tail Fly, popularized by Burl Ives in the 1950s. The chorus says, Jim Crack Corn and I Don't Care. Now, I've always sang that Jimmy Crack Corn.
That's how I always heard it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can see how it could be Jim Crack Corn, because it goes, you know, kind of slides over. And if you were talking about Jim Crack Corn, then you wouldn't care about it, because it's of no value. As a noun, it means a cheap, showy knick-knack.
Okay.
But it's used more often as an adjective. His gimcrack fishing lures are better at attracting the eyes of fishermen than of fish.
Yeah, I like that.
Gimcrack referred to mechanical contrivances in the 1630s, though it could refer to a showy person in 1610. It's of uncertain origin. It wasn't so much the word gimcrack that caught my eye as the synonyms given for the word. So let's look at some of those.
All right.
How would you use trifle in a sentence?
Can I use it as a gerund? A trifling affair?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. A small consequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like gimcrack, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It does have many uses now, not to mention a delicious and beautiful dessert, typically consisting of cake soaked in rum or brandy and topped with layers of preserves, custard, and cream. But the trifle that is synonymous with gimcrack means something of little value, substance, or importance, and was first known to be used in the 14th century, 2 centuries before gimcrack.
Wow.
As a verb, it means to treat someone or something as unimportant, or to talk in a jesting or mocking manner, with the intent to delude or mislead. Another word that means gimcrack, but predates it by a century, is gewgaw. Have you heard that one?
Yes, I have.
I have not.
Oh, yeah. What? It's in some movie.
Oh, really?
I want to think it's a Coen Brothers movie or something, but yeah. All your fancy gewgaws.
And, oh,
yeah.
I'm not sure I would have spelled it as it appears most commonly, G-E-W-G-A-W, which use,
yeah.
But it's just gewgaw.
You know, I think Donald Harrington in his novels about Staymore may have used gewgaw.
An alternative is geegaw, which is pronounced differently. It's G-E-E. Gaw.
That to me, that sounds more like something you'd call your grandfather when you're four.
Oh, gee-gaw.
Yeah.
Two words that I'm more likely to use than any of these others we've looked at are knick-knack and bric-a-brac.
Yep.
So what are those?
Knick-knack is a little something, you know, like, I don't know, like a nail clipper that also is a fish scaler or something.
Yeah, or has a mermaid on it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then,
bric-a-brac.
Bric-a-brac, I think, is more than one thing. All this bric-a-brac, it's like...
And see, that's something that I had never thought of. Knick-knack...
is one.
Singular, and bric-a-brac is plural.
Right. Knick-knacks.
Yeah.
But never bric-a-bracs.
Right, yeah. Knick-knack shows up just 10 years after gimcrack, and bric-a-brac appears two centuries later. Basically, a collection of knick-knacks is bric-a-brac.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Finally, Kyle, one of the synonyms given for gimcrack really appealed to me in light of today's circumstances. It comes from the 15th century, originally meaning deceit or fraud, and now applied to material objects of little or no value. Samuel Johnson described the word as something fallaciously splendid, something of less value than it seems, a falsehood or empty talk, or something of no value. The word is trumpery.
Comments to the Militant Grammarian, who is Catherine Sherrills. Thank you, Catherine.
You're welcome.
The newest version of Medicaid expansion in Arkansas is officially on the books. Last week, the federal government first gave its approval of a work requirement for some beneficiaries. Then, a little more than 24 hours later, both chambers of the Arkansas legislature approved this latest addition. This week, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, sat down with Cindy Gillespie, the director of the Arkansas Department of Human Services, to find out how the work requirement component will function. Gillespie says users will first need to go to accessarkansas.gov.
The first thing you do is you go on there and you literally put in just your name, your information, and create an account, just like you would do with anything else. Then what you do from there is you'll go into your account and you'll tell us whether or not you would fit any of the areas that would make you exempt, so that you don't have to work.
There's a lot of those, but for instance, there could be an under 18-year-old at your home that you have to take care of.
If you have a dependent child in your home, if you're caring for an incapacitated person, if your mother is incapacitated and you're the caregiver, if you're a full-time student,
there's a lot of those.
Yes.
So let's say I don't meet any of those exemptions.
Okay.
I've got to do 80 hours of work or search for work or workforce education
activities each month. And then what you do each month is you come on that portal and you tell us what you did. I mean, we've made it very simple, but you come back in and you say, I worked for 20 hours, and you tell us where you worked, right, and what you earned doing that. Or you say, I did job search activities through the Department of Workforce Services, and I did that for 40 hours. And you tell us what
That's a lot of job search in 40 hours.
That is a lot of job search for 40 hours. We actually have a limit. You can only do 40 hours a month of job search.
Is this Is this the honor system, though? I mean, how are you going to attract that these folks are being honest in this?
Couple of ways, but primarily people tell us, we ask for enough detail. In other words, if you tell us you worked, you're going to tell us where you worked. You're going to tell us where it's located. And then we will be able to do a couple of things. One, we do have data feeds that we get through the Department of Workforce Services and others that tell us what wages and people are earning. So we will be able to look at some of it through data feeds. And then we're also going to have our own quality assurance program where we pull a certain number of them each month and we go check them out.
Kind of do an audit.
Do an audit and see what's going on. And then we also we will be running data analytics on what we see. And if we start to see any odd patterns, then that will be something that we will go check out.
That's a lot of work for a work requirement.
You know, we look at this as it is so incredibly important that the people who are on the program use this program as an opportunity to advance up the economic ladder, right? If they don't take advantage of the services that are available to them through the Department of Workforce Services, I mean, there are free job search, there are on-the-job training programs, there are apprentice programs, there are all kinds of programs to help people get their education, get a GED, two-year vocational, you name it, right? All of that is there. And people are not taking advantage of it. So a little bit of work on our part in order to help somebody get to those services and actually improve their lives so that they move off of Medicaid and move on up the economic ladder. I mean, that's what we're here to do.
So one of the waivers did not get approval. Tell me where that stands and what has to happen, do you think, for it to get approval
Sure.
from the feds?
That part of the waiver is for us to be able to reduce the income eligibility limit for you to be on Arkansas Works from what is currently 138% of federal poverty level to the poverty level, to 100%, right? And that is a much more complicated set of analysis by the government.
The concern is that larger states may also decide that they would like to do something like that, and it could add a tremendous amount of money
to the federal budget. It's really an issue around how much authority do they have to be able to waive something like that that is written in the Affordable Care Act and be able to tell us, yes, you can move in this way in your state and pull that down to this level. So we've been going through analysis after analysis with them for months. And as you saw, part of what also went on in Washington is they had 8 states ask for a work requirement. They have 9 others that are in the process of putting in place a request for a work requirement. And so they just said, we're going to step back and we're going to focus on getting the rules around work requirements for states in place. And asked us, do you want to wait till we've finished on this other, or do you want to move ahead on your work requirement? We said, let us move ahead on the work requirement. We'll continue talking to you about how to get ourselves down to the 100%.
Cindy Gillespie is the director of Arkansas's Department of Human Services, and she talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. Cindy Gillespie says this year the work component will exist for some recipients in the 30 to 49-year-old age bracket. Then next year, that will be expanded to include 19 to 49-year-olds. There is more from this conversation, as well as coverage of other Arkansas matters, at talkbusiness.net.
The city of Eureka Springs offers a variety of happily ever after wedding options, from the traditional to the intimate, held in historic hotels, Victorian parlors, and one of many floral springs. In Eureka Springs, ceremonies are available anywhere at any time. More information at eurekasprings.org. After 15 years, Modest Mouse, best known for their chart-topping single Float On, returns to Northwest Arkansas. This American indie rock group brings their performance to the Walmart Amp in Rogers Thursday, July 19th. Tickets go on sale this Friday morning, March 16th at 10 a.m. AmpTickets.com or 443-5600.
A service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Eureka Springs. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kelms. Another brand new edition of our daily show tomorrow at noon and 7 on 91.3. The Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas will present Gardening Ideas Q&A with Paul James, the gardener guy from HGTV. That's taking place March 17th, two times, 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day. There is a cost if you're not a member of the Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas. If you'd like to know more about this event, you can go to Facebook and search for Flower Garden Nature Society NWA. Also on the 17th, Tricycle Farms will present the 5th annual Fayetteville Seed Exchange. That will take place from noon to 3:30 in the afternoon at Trinity United Methodist Church in Fayetteville. The event includes a seed saving and propagation roundtable discussion with Herb Culver and Guy Ames at 2:30 and a tour of the Tricycle Farms at 3:30. You can bring your seeds to share or trade. And if you'd like to know more about this St. Patrick's Day event, tricyclefarms.org. And the Photographic Society of Northwest Arkansas will have a day of nature photography at Hobbs State Park beginning at 10 a.m. on guess what day? March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. It's a photo walk of Sinking Stream Trail. Then at 2 on the 17th at the Visitor Center, Mike Winroth, photographer for the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, will be speaking about Arkansas wildlife photography. This was something that was scheduled earlier this year but had to be altered because of weather. And then finally on the 17th at 4 p.m., Cleo Wright will be teaching a class on nature photography. All of those events are free. All of them are open to the public. More information and registration available at psnwa.org. Ozarks at Large, I've mentioned, is a production of KUAF 91.3. Don't forget, we're also available as a podcast. You can subscribe for absolutely free through services like iTunes and Stitcher. You can also find past editions of our show and individual stories and interviews that you can share across social media platforms at KUAF.com and OzarksAtLarge.com. You can also listen to us through the free KUAF app that's downloadable for many smartphones and tablets. And if you subscribe to the free service NPR One, you'll hear many of our local stories through that application as well. All of this is explained at KUAF.com and OzarksAtLarge.com. All right, we'll end this Tuesday edition of our show with music from Rosenbridge. They will be playing at the Forge in Bentonville from 5 to 7 p.m. on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. You can find out much more about the two guys in Rosenbridge at their Facebook page. This is a song they recorded for us exclusively at the Carver Center for Public Radio titled Counterfeit. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.